Welcome to the Cutaneous Connection, a podcast from the staff at Dermatology Times, aiming to provide you with the latest news in dermatology, to exclusive interviews with leading industry experts, and a glimpse at what goes on behind the scenes. I'm your host, Linda Stokum.
Today, I am joined by Marianne Makrida-Senna, MD, Assistant Professor of Dermatology at Harvard Medical School, and Director of the Mass General Hospital Hair Loss Clinic and Clinical Research Trials for Hair Loss Disorders in Boston, Massachusetts. We discuss androgenetic alopecia, or AGA, which is a common form of hair loss in both men and women. In men, this condition is also known as male pattern baldness. We dive into current treatment challenges, new regeneration devices, and how to help patients with textured hair.
Sure. So my name is Marianne Makrida-Senna. I'm an assistant professor of dermatology at Harvard Medical School, and I'm the director of the Hair Loss Clinic and Clinical Research Trials Unit for Hair Loss Disorders at Mass General Hospital.
Right now, what pearls can you offer based on your experience when treating patients for AGA?
Yeah, so, you know, with treating AGA, the trouble is that although this has been the most common form of hair loss for which both men and women seek treatment, we actually haven't had any real novel therapeutics in our armamentarium as treating physicians for a very long time. A lot of the treatments that we're using are off-label and are based on our clinical observations of them improving hair regrowth sort of by accident. So medications like minoxidil or spironolactone, both of which were originally brought to the market for blood pressure control, right? We ended up observing that they help to regrow hair. But as far as novel therapeutics that have been developed, we're really lacking in that area. And so I think it's very important that we continue to investigate newer options for these patients.
Of course. And with newer options, what are the suggested direction for research right now? Like a new approach to hair generation?
So I see in my clinic, and we see largely almost all hair loss patients, okay, a very keen desire on the part of patients to want to maximize their ability to increase hair growth or hold on to the hair that they have through more natural or sort of organic methods, right? So patients are always asking about various supplements that might work or things like platelet-rich plasma, which involves, you know, basically activating and processing the patient's own blood plasma and then injecting it back into the scalp, or other things like microneedling to help to stimulate that hair growth and hair follicle sort of vitality. That's being driven by patients. And I think as providers and as investigators, we need to listen to that and be mindful of what our patients are asking for. And I think that they're more inclined to want to do things like that, that optimize their own natural sort of hair follicle cycle or hair follicle growth, if they're able to, rather than say, take a medication or something like that, if a useful therapeutic approach that's natural exists.
What would you say are the biggest medical challenges in stopping hair loss and growing new hair?
Yeah. So in addition to the fact that, you know, our toolbox for treatment is somewhat limited. Exactly what came up from this research poster is what I hear from patients all the time, which is because it is so important to be consistent and be consistent lifelong with the treatments that we recommend for hair loss, right? Just like any other thing you treat, whether it's blood pressure or, you know, I need to wear eyeglasses to see properly, right? It's not that you use these things for 3 months and then you have perfect eyesight or perfect blood pressure for the rest of your life. You need to continue to use it, otherwise your body resets back. That compliance is so important and is one of the key things that that actually leads to either good or not so good outcomes for hair loss patients. And you know, I think that was highlighted well in this poster, where approximately 75% of patients just said either because of cost or because I didn't really think it was working, or because it was just hard to stick with, I'm not treating my hair loss with anything right now. And so I think it's very important. The other piece that I think is important, and we actually did like a very small research letter in the JAD on this, is around patient perceptions of whether or not they're improved from therapy. And like I always say to patients, you know, hair is very different than, say, a rash that you see on your skin, right? If you have a rash on your skin, it's very obvious if it's there or not there. So that if you put a therapeutic cream or some sort of other treatment, right, you see that rash disappear, and it's pretty fast that will happen. Hair is like watching grass grow, right? And so people are looking in the mirror every single day. They're not appreciating the big differences that are actually occurring over time. And so we actually showed that patients will come in and they'll say, I don't think I'm better, I think I'm worse, until we show them our standardized before and after pictures. And they're like, wow, I am better. And then they're more likely to comply with the treatment and continue the treatment. And so that's also incredibly important, especially since a lot of the things that are FDA approved, like topical minoxidil, for example, for these conditions are over the counter. And unless patients have some standardized way of monitoring their process, they might not appreciate the benefits too. So both of those things that I mentioned are really important in this patient population.
One of the dermatologists on our Twitter had asked, I wondered if it was a question about, are patients not willing to see an MD? Do they not know they need to see an MD? What's going on that makes them go, I don't feel like I can get treated for this?
So I think a lot of it stems from the fact that while board certified dermatologists can see hair patients, I think finding a dermatologist who specializes in hair loss disorders can be really important. Oftentimes, you know, understandably, dermatologists are limited with the length of their visits, and something like properly diagnosing and then counseling patients on the best treatment for them and going over the risks and benefits and answering all their questions, just impossible to do in the usual time frame of a dermatology visit, especially when oftentimes these patients are in there with other things as well, right? Like skin checks and things like that. So the benefit of these are of hair specialty clinics, like the one that we have at Mass General and others, is that we have more time to spend with the patient, so that we can provide that proper diagnosis and education around treatments that I think really help aid compliance. But you can imagine that, you know, not every place has a hair loss center like we do. There are many that are run by colleagues of mine around the country, and they're excellent. But if you live in a place where you might not have access to that, it may be that you're left feeling like, I don't know that there's really a good option for me, and so what's the point type of thing. What all of us try to do who are hair specialists is provide as much education as we can through different avenues, whether it's at the American Academy of Dermatology or other meetings. Many of my colleagues, not me, I'm terrible at it, but will be, you know, sort of more active on Instagram and other social media outlets to sort of help reach patients that way. But all of that can be helpful in helping patients understand, you know, where to go to seek treatment, and that there are options available that can help.
How is it different when you go to treat a patient of color versus someone who has the straight type of hair or non-textured hair? And is it sometimes harder to get them to have a customized treatment plan just because of a lack of knowledge from the dermatologist then, or a miscommunication between patient and dermatologist?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's incredibly important. I mean, especially for me, because this is like the patient population I largely see, to educate myself about, you know, what are the types of things that we have to keep in mind when we're treating patients who are skin of color, right? So the first is, you know, people who are Black or have sort of Afro textured hair, it's incredibly important that you're not telling them, okay, you have to wash your hair 3 times a week or 4 times a week, because they don't need to wash their hair 3 and 4 times a week, and they don't. And so if you're giving them, say, a prescription shampoo and asking them to do that, it's going to be impossible for them to be compliant, right? And then also to understand the different styling practices that they may typically use, and understanding how that impacts, you know, your treatment regimen as well, right? You don't want to be giving them something that they're going to have to put on their scalp 5 times a week that's causing significant buildup. Or if they're applying various oils to the scalp or hair, you know, being aware of that, as that can also impact your therapeutic approach. And very fortunate to have amazing colleagues in this space like Crystal Lagoo at Johns Hopkins and Amy McMichael at Wake Forest, who are really fabulous at helping us to understand, you know, the best way to sort of aid our patients who are Black and skin of color in making sure we come up with a plan that works for them. And so they've done a lot of work in helping to educate the rest of us in how to best take care of this patient population.
So what did the study show in terms of time to improvement, and how did it change across patient groups?
Yeah, so I don't know what the company has shared from its male AGA study to date, but my group published a pilot study in the International Journal of Women's Dermatology, I think it was a year and a half ago, in using this device in women with female pattern hair thinning. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I felt like this was so important is because even if you're, so number one, 80% of women, of patients coming in for hair loss consultation to our clinic are female. That's not to say that hair loss does not affect males, but there's a lot more cultural acceptance for males to have hair thinning than there is for women, right? And so I think because of that and other factors, we have a higher percentage of women coming into our clinic. The second thing is, not all women, but many, will wear their hair longer than men. And so my concern was, well, if you show a benefit of a device like this in men, that might not necessarily translate directly to women, because what if the hair somehow affects the micro wounding or micro needling, you know, effect? Then that will always be a question. And so we did a pilot trial in 10 women and actually showed that patients perceived improvement. So it was basically done over 4 months. And also that patients' Sinclair score, which is a severity scale that we used their severity decreased from the treatment over time. And so we felt very, very good about those results, that both patients appreciated improvement and that we saw significant improvement in just 3 or 4 short months. Typically, you know, traditional therapies that we use can take upwards of 6 months to see any benefit.
And I know we touched a little bit about already available treatments. Are there any coming up in the pipeline that you're excited about and that you think would work in either mono or combination therapy for these patients?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it all depends upon, you know, how severe the patient is when they come in and what other things that they've tried. And then you also have to think about, you know, what other medical problems might they have, what other things might be contributing to their hair loss, both from a medication standpoint, but also, you know, other diseases like thyroid disease or diabetes, and making sure that those are well controlled and stable. And so depending on the patient, you know, I think that right now we have a good amount of things that we can offer, and that will vary, you know, depending, you know, sometimes we'll just be able to treat with one thing. Sometimes we'll wanna, you know, sort of attack the hair loss from a multifactorial point of view and use, you know, 2 or 3 things in combination. And that's all just very patient specific, how we make those decisions. I am encouraged by the fact that there seems to be sort of invigorated interest in alopecia and different forms of alopecia and getting better treatments for it. And so I'm hopeful that just like, you know, this device wasn't available, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, and now we're seeing some exciting results potentially coming from it, that other things will hopefully also follow suit so that we'll be able to offer more options for our patients.
How do you address patient concerns when it comes to new devices?
So that's why I think it is so important that any devices like this go through rigorous clinical trials, right? And so a lot of times things that are marketed to patients, while they make all these major claims of things working, when you boil things down and you say, okay, show me the data, show me the studies, it's like, oh, you know, crickets. So I think what this company has done very well is that they have put the time, the effort, and the funding into ensuring that this is an evidence-based treatment approach, right? That they've gone through the different phase clinical trials, have done hair counts on the participants, have done photography, have reported on patient outcomes, and have been able to show, you know, look, this actually works. And by, you know, presenting their data too at these dermatologic meetings is also incredibly important because it helps to put, again, evidence behind the claims that hopefully will translate to patients, you know, understanding that this treatment is different than other types of treatment. I think one thing that was really great about this poster is that it highlighted that I think it was like 74 or 75% of patients who were surveyed said that they would be likely or extremely likely after viewing the responses, right, the photos that were embedded in the questionnaire, to wanting to try this treatment. And so while patients may be, you know, expressing frustration or lack of efficacy for other treatments that they've tried, it's not that they're not willing to try new things if they're shown the evidence, right? And so it's very important for us to make sure that when we are presenting different options, we are as honest as we can be about what the evidence shows and what patients' expectations might be. But I found that very encouraging that patients reported that way in the survey. Yeah, I mean, the other problem with that is there's so many things that make these claims. So like I lost like 30 to 50% of my hair after both of my pregnancies. And I didn't do anything because I know that that stops shedding, goes back to normal, and that the hair slowly grows back without anything. Mm-hmm. But like I say to my patients all the time, had I tried some like random supplement or some random, you know, thing on the internet, I would have thought, my gosh, this is like the ideal treatment. Look at all my hair growing back, right? And so unfortunately, I think people who have a commercial interest in this space will often kind of take advantage of patients because they know how psychosocially debilitating having significant hair loss can be. And so by making claims that are not evidence-based and by pushing these products, you know, patients end up spending thousands of dollars and time doing things that they don't need to be doing, or maybe not treating things in a way when there are good treatments that could address the type of hair loss that they're dealing with. And so that's why it's, I think, you know, I do try to say, like, if you're really concerned about your hair loss, make sure you're going to the right resources. Don't just read whatever's on the internet. And if possible, try to seek out a dermatologist who specializes in hair loss for the best sort of outcomes.
For more Dermatology Times content, from articles and videos to podcasts, visit www.dermatologytimes.com.